Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast in which I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. My guest tonight is another returning guest, Gene McDonald. Gene, thank you so much for joining me again.
Thanks for having me on. I'm super excited.
Excellent. So tell the people, if they haven't listened to your first episode or if they don't know who you are, a little bit about yourself.
I am the founder of App Camp for Girls, which is a program that works with middle school girls for a one-week summer camp program to teach them how to make iPhone apps, with the eventual mission of having more women in the software development field. Mm-hmm. And I am very much in the iOS app development industry. I've been the marketing director at Smile Software for, I'm not now. And I'm always interested in that. And I'm also like a huge podcast fan and nerd. Ooh. And I've been listening to podcasts for like over 10 years now, like constantly.
Well, that's hardcore. So let me ask you, this is not a normal random trick question. And this is not an obvious attempt to get a compliment, but what are some of your favorite podcasts? This podcast excluded. I don't even know if it would be on that list, but let's just assume that it is not. So other podcasts that people should check out.
That's an interesting question. Cause my interests have evolved over time. Release Notes is one of my favorite, iOS industry podcasts. That's a podcast about the business of being an indie app developer. And I like the hosts of that very much, Charles Perry and Joe Chaplinsky. I listen to a show called Audio Dharma, which is it's lectures from a meditation center in Redwood City, California. And one of my podcast buddies and friends, David Sparks, said, you should check this out because we both have an interest in meditation. And that's probably the podcast I listen to the most consistently, aside from Random Trek. And I'm sorry, I know I wasn't supposed to say that I like it, but it is definitely in my top five, if not, definitely. I listen to it a lot because it's so fun.
Well, you're too kind. And it's very meditative as well, I'm sure. You can just close your eyes and think about, space-time anomalies as you do. So now I know that you are a fan of Voyager. It's your favorite series, a Star Trek series. If not your favorite series, period. I don't know. It might be your favorite series ever of any television show. I'm not sure. That has me thinking. I wonder what my favorite television series ever is.
I could not answer that question right now. But of Star Trek, yes. My opinion has not changed. Voyager is still my favorite series.
And I think we spend a lot of time talking about Voyager. I always spend a lot of time talking about Voyager with people who like Voyager because I find it interesting, because it is not my favorite Star Trek. It's not my least favorite. Not my favorite.
Close to your least favorite.
It is it's close. But I will say that the gap between Voyager and Enterprise is pretty wide. Because I feel like Voyager has a better hit to miss ratio than Enterprise does.
Yes, I agree with that. And I of course know that your favorite is Deep Space Nine.
True.
So the last time I was on the show was 2 years ago, and I don't know if you remember, but I had this like terrible back problem, and I was laid up for 3 weeks, and we kept having to postpone the show because I couldn't come on because I could not even get out of bed.
So you're loopy on the drugs, one imagines.
I was loopy on the drugs. So I had never watched Deep Space Nine after like the first couple seasons because it just didn't appeal to me. Oh. But listening to you and listening, to your episodes, I thought, I should give it a try, especially since I apparently missed the whole point of Deep Space Nine.
And I'm in severe pain, so clearly this will be great for me to watch this and have a great impression.
I have nothing else to do. I will watch Deep Space Nine. And I think I understand now that I have watched it from, beginning to end, I understand how it could rank very highly. among your favorites, you know, if not your favorite. And I say this to all Star Trek fans, but
the way you said that, though, makes me think that perhaps it's not your favorite. I mean, obviously, we know Voyager is your favorite.
It's not my favorite. It's not my second favorite. There's things I don't love about it. But what I think that you're missing about Voyager.
Oh, yes. Tell me.
That you got out of Deep Space Nine is, I presume when you watched it for the first time, you watched it from beginning to end. Like maybe you were watching it when it was released. So every week you were waiting for another episode of the story arc that went on for like whatever, 140 episodes.
Yes, it was an impressive story arc, but yes, I did watch it contemporaneously.
Yeah. So, and you, I know, you know, from what you've said on the show, you have gained a better appreciation for Voyager having done this. And I think that's cool, but I think if you don't watch a show from beginning to end, like you never quite will become a big fan of it because you'll always be dipping into like, oh, you got the bad episode or you got the good episode, but you won't know. I mean, yes, I agree with you that Neelix is very annoying, but
how could you not?
Well, yeah, that's true. I don't know anybody who says Neelix is their favorite character.
No, but I've had people who say, you know, I'm surprised that, you know, Enterprise is their favorite series. Surprising. Yes, no one has ever surprised me with, you know what? I love that Neelix.
But he becomes, from the beginning, he's part of the show. And you sort, if you want to watch the whole show, you have to accept Neelix. And then you tolerate him the way you tolerate a relative that you don't love, but you must see them if you want to get together at Thanksgiving and Christmas.
I can see that.
Yeah. And I know there's still episodes of Voyager you haven't seen yet.
There are. And this is, I believe, the episode that we watched, which the people who are listening to this podcast know already, Bliss, which is from season 5, episode 14, is in fact an episode that I had never seen before. Although having watched it, I felt like I was watching an original series episode, which is not a bad thing. But I feel like I've never seen this episode of Voyager before, but I've certainly seen this episode of Star Trek before.
I know, that's funny you say that, because it made me go digging into like my Star Trek, you know, back catalog and say, all right, there's a couple of obvious episodes that resonate from, you know, Bliss resonates with, and I'd be curious, you know, a couple that came to me, and I'm curious if there's some others that came to you, but I think there's one from the Next Generation that is absolutely like a parallel story, sort of, I mean, which is The Game.
Oh, yes.
Right. So The Game is where the whole crew is taken over by this kind of weird headset video game that it becomes addictive and also apparently can control the crew's minds to do evil things. And
like Pokemon Go.
Exactly. And so I haven't played Pokemon, so I'm not going to.
That was a contemporary joke for the kids listening. Yes. I'm sure that actually people have stopped playing Pokemon Go, so it's not as contemporary as I'd like to think it was. But
so, you know, and then there's the role of Wesley Crusher and Data are like the only two people who can like stop this from, you know, taking over the ship and having it be captured. So I think that's the most direct hit I got, was like, oh god, this, I had seen the episode before, but I hadn't rewatched it because it's not a bad episode, I don't think, but it's not like, once you've seen it once, yeah, you got it
right, because there's twist, and if you know the twist already, which is not, they, well, you know, the twist, it's kind of a telegraphed twist, so you watch the first 2 minutes and you kind of know the twist already, but yeah, if you already, it's kind of like but not as good as The Sixth Sense, right? So if you know the twist to The Sixth Sense, which I will not ruin, but I can't, I imagine everyone knows what it is already, but if you don't, knowing it pretty much ruins the whole movie. Well, it doesn't ruin it, but it takes away that very kind of ending. So certainly nothing on that level for this episode, but there is like a tiny little, like, oh, yeah, that's right. Thing. The episode that popped into my mind when I was watching this is from the original series, The Doomsday Machine, which features a giant thing in space that eats stuff, which is in fact what this is, except this has the added benefit of this giant thing apparently has it has teeth and it has telepathic powers to make you see funny things. Well, not funny things, but see what you want to see.
Right.
And then lure you into its belly and devour you, apparently.
Yeah, the thing in Doomsday Machine just like sucked you in. It just had like whatever necessary like gravimetric force power to like just suck in planets, right? And then and ships as well.
It didn't have any fancy telepathy powers. It was just a big gaping maw, Galactus style, needing to eat everything in its path for no apparent reason, which is also the same thing that's happening here, this giant thing, which also reminded me, it had so many echoes, it reminded me also of in Star Trek The Motion Picture, the gaseous kind of cloud around V'ger as it's approaching and kind of, you know, digitizing Klingons and things, as you do. no digitized Klingons in this episode, although an unconscious half-Klingon who wakes up and is confused.
Yes, he's very confused. Everybody is confused, though, in this episode, besides Seven of Nine.
And Naomi. Yes. Yep. Who, you know, there are things that's generally, well, I wouldn't want to say generally, but there are things that are hard, that have a high level of difficulty. Mm-hmm. In television shows, not that I'm an expert, but from, I've watched a lot of TV shows, child actors are hit or miss, I feel like. Mm-hmm. Wesley Crusher, you know, we all like Will Wheaton now. He's grown up. He's fantastic. Wesley Crusher, Will Wheaton as a child actor in TNG. Not my favorite.
Right.
He was really good in Stand By Me. He was a fine actor, but it's tough. He's, you know, you're going through puberty. It's in, you, nobody wants to be on a TV show when you're going through all that kind of stuff, right? Right. I say all of this because I think Naomi Wildman was really good. I don't even know the name of the actress, but she did a great job.
Scarlett Palmer. So I took the, you know, the opportunity, having watched this, I was thinking, well, everything else in this show, like we know, you know, Seven, we like Seven, or, you know, we admire her at any rate.
Yes.
But the rest of the crew is completely, you know, on telepathic, you know, messed up brains.
That's right. Then,
so really, you know, Naomi Wildman is the only other character in this show. So I started digging into, like, you know, I've watched the entire series, so I've seen her several times, and but I've never looked at her like, you know, in some kind of methodical way. She was on, that actress was on 16 episodes of Star Trek Voyager. So, and in IMDb, they said she's the youngest regular actress on Voyager. Well, no duh. but the second youngest of the entire series. So I was like, who is younger than her that is a regular actor?
Was it Alexander from TNG?
Alexander. Who was he?
Worf's son.
Oh, right. Yeah, he was probably younger. But what? How many episodes was he?
Well, I don't know what regular means. So
He wasn't a member of the crew. I mean, that Naomi wasn't exactly a member of the crew, but she was, you know, she was a child of Voyager. Mm-hmm. So she was born on Voyager. In fact, the episode she's born on is one of the best episodes, I think, of Voyager. Have you seen it? The one where, I can't remember, it's called Phase Shift or something. Like the Voyager goes through something which splits the ship into two ships that are like slightly out of phase with each other. And you basically have two crews, two Captain Janeways, and a lot of trouble.
Twice the trouble?
Yeah, you do. It's a fascinating show. You should go watch that one.
I think I have seen it.
And Naomi is born on that, in that, during that episode, on one Voyager. But yes, I don't want to ruin it even for the audience, because there's so few cool things in Voyager, you know, that people haven't seen before. But if you haven't seen that episode, the Vidians, it's an early episode. The Vidians are part of it, that one of the creepier alien races that Star Trek has ever
put together. Need to get parts. I believe
body parts.
Is it called Deadlock? Is that the episode you're thinking of?
Shoot. I mean, you think I'd have notes, but because I looked it up, I was like, oh yeah, that's where she was born. I mean, there's another episode earlier where her mother, who is an ensign, Samantha Wildman, tells Captain Janeway, by the way, I'm pregnant. You know, like they're relatively new to the Delta Quadrant, and her husband, you know, is back on Earth or wherever, and he's not human, he's Katarin. And that's why Naomi has those little dots on her forehead, is Katarins have little tiny horns down their forehead. But we never see Katarins anywhere else, I believe.
Just see a half Katarin. And that episode we have covered on Random Trek. It is Elogium? I didn't know how to say it then. I don't know how to say it now. So that is the episode where Kes wants to have a baby.
And it's all about bugs. Babies and
yes,
stuff.
Yes, everybody's having babies.
Yeah. So, yeah, Samantha Wildman announces she's pregnant. Then that episode comes along where the ship gets divided into two, two ships. And one of the things that happens in the middle of all that is that Naomi is born. So she's actually a pretty miracle baby. I'm just going to say, go back and watch that episode, because I think it's one of the best. Obviously, we don't agree on the series, but I think if we went through like episode by episode, we'd agree on which ones are really good. Although you didn't like Tuvix, which was one of the good ones.
Well, it's because Neelix, come on.
It's because Neelix is it.
He's a main character in it, even though it does bring up an interesting moral quandary, though. I will say that. But yeah, not one of my favorite episodes. Naomi Wildman, we see the future Naomi Wildman in an episode two, which name I don't remember, but they travel in the future and it's she's all there. So she's there. She's an interesting character, right? Because there are not a lot of babies in Star Trek. There's certainly not a lot of people who are born on a starship and then kind of grow up and become an ensign. And so Voyager is all she knows, and it's her home.
Yeah,
which is a critical kind of important thing to know in this episode, right? Because they are it starts off with this wacky alien who is I don't know why he's not wacky, but he's in distress, and we see he's eaten by this thing.
I think he's wacky. I don't know. That's the technical medical term, but he's obsessed.
He is obsessed. It is clear. Also, they make it very clear. And then they just kind of spell it out that he is basically Captain Ahab, and the big space monster with telepathy is his white whale and his Moby Dick. So he's in this ship, which I actually kind of thought the set for his ship was very Star Wars-y looking, less Star Trek-y looking, because it's kind of lived in and it's...
I was going to say, because it's mostly falling apart.
Exactly. So that's why when I think of Star Wars space vehicles, they're beat up and fallen apart. And when I think of Star Trek space vehicles, they're generally clean and orderly and everybody's wearing a uniform.
Yes.
Which is, if you think about it, in Star Wars, those clean, orderly ships where everyone's wearing a uniform are the Empire ships. So I guess I don't know what that means. Wow. I'm sure someone could write a term paper about that. So this episode of Random Trek is sponsored by Casper. Casper is a sleep brand that created one perfect mattress sold directly to customers. It eliminated the cost-driven, inflated prices that you find at your big mattress store. Don't let Big Mattress tell you not to buy a mattress on the internet.
It is an award-winning sleep service developed in-house, and it has a sleek design, and it's delivered in a small, how-do-they-do-that-size box. And now, I know what you're thinking. Casper only does mattresses, right? Wrong. They also offer an adaptive pillow and soft, breathable sheets. Casper's in-house team of engineers spent thousands of hours developing the Casper. It combines a springy latex and supportive memory foam for a sleep surface that's got just the right sink and just the right bounce. Plus, its breathable design keeps you cool to help regulate your temperature throughout the night. Now you're thinking, Scott, we're not in a post-cash society like our friends in Star Trek. How much are these mattresses going to cost? Well, I'll tell you how much. Now, you know, a normal mattress, you go to the big mattress store, you'll fork over $1,500. But Casper mattresses cost $500 for twin size, $600 for twin XL, $750 for a full, $850 for a queen, and $950 for a king. Buying a Casper mattress is completely risk-free. You get free delivery, free returns, and a 100-night home trial. That's right, sleep on it for 100 nights. If you don't love it, they'll pick it up, refund you everything. Casper understands the importance of truly sleeping on a mattress before you commit. Now, just for you Random Trek listeners, you can get a $50 towards any purchase by visiting casper.com/trek. That's Casper, casper.com/trek. And using the offer code TREK. Terms and conditions apply. Our thanks to Casper for supporting Random Trek. He's swallowed by this thing. Oh no. We don't know who this alien is. That's the beginning. It's kind of weird. You're like, I'm sure we'll never see this guy again. But you do. And then there's the scene where we know. So, you know, you watch a lot of Star Trek. And I guess this is true of all episodes, right? Because you have a limited amount of time. So when you introduce a character that you already know, like Naomi Wellman's not in every episode. But if she's going to be in like the first 5 minutes, that's a pretty clear indication that she's going to be important.
Yeah.
Because why bother having her there if she's not going to be important?
Excellent point.
So she's there with Tom Paris and Seven of Nine, and they're out looking for, I forget what they're looking for.
Deuterium.
Deuterium, that's right. They're running low on deuterium, so they're scanning for it. Naomi is bored.
Well, they're going back. They're home. They're going on their way home, and they haven't found deuterium.
She's bummed out. She's like,
and she says, can I go on your search tomorrow? Because this is my first away mission and nothing happened.
Which is a good thing for everybody else. Totally, right?
It's a really good point.
And Seven of Nine says no. Nah. Because Seven of Nine, I enjoy the fact that Seven of Nine always calls Naomi Wildman. Yes. She never just calls her Naomi.
Yeah, that's true. Naomi Wildman. The way she says it. It's very funny.
Yes. So they set up this little thing, and Tom Paris is there, who, you know, I also don't like. I know. What are your feelings about Tom Paris?
I like Tom Paris, and I've liked him since the beginning of Voyager, because he's like the foil to all these serious people, you know, and he is kind of a screw up, and he does carry a little bit of he carries the Captain Kirk legacy of, you know, space Lothario.
That's true.
And one of the things that I was thinking about watching this episode, knowing that you would not like to talk about Tom Paris, and you would,
we could talk about
like
him.
You would say, oh, Tom Paris, but
I did.
I thought, so you remember when the actor was in The Next Generation, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that episode with Wesley and the other Space Academy, you know, cadets, like flyers, like they're like the Blue Angels of the Academy.
Yes,
and they screw up.
They do.
And somebody dies.
And they cover it up.
And Robert Duncan McNeil is the actor playing the ringleader and the one saying cover it up, like, and here's what we're going to do to cover it up.
Yep.
And they were thinking, what I understand is, like, for Voyager, they wanted to make him the same guy, but then they realized they would have to pay royalties to whoever wrote that episode of The Next Generation, because he would be a character carried over. So they just basically changed his name without changing any of his qualities, really. Mm-hmm. And I think it would have been way more interesting if he had been this guy who had been clearly, you know, a bad guy. Like they say that, you know, in the setup for the series, like he's let out of, you know, whatever penal colony to come and helm Voyager. That's, you know, if he helps them with this mission against the Maquis, then he will get, that's what Janeway offers him. Mm-hmm. But he comes out of nowhere in that pilot. But if he had been that guy from the Next Generation, he could have theoretically been in penal colony for the very thing he did on Next Generation.
Yeah, and that would have made him more interesting. And I'm not surprised that they actually just changed his name so they could avoid paying royalties, because that continues the fine tradition of Star Trek doing kind of wacky things like that. I don't know. Yeah. I've read These Are the Voyages, the first season, which is a great book that details every – there are three books because there are three seasons of the original series, although there's been some controversy. I've had a guest on who said that the original series was their least favorite series of Star Trek, and that was like, oh my gosh. But anyway, not my least favorite. I read the book, the first book, and in it he details the fact that, you know, there's the iconic Star Trek theme song from the original series.
Yes.
Gene Roddenberry realized every time they would play it, the person who wrote it, whose name escapes me, maybe Alexander Courage, someone will correct me if I'm wrong, because I probably am, would get royalties for it, right? Because that's the way it is. And he thought, I would like also to get money every time this theme song is played. So he wrote lyrics to the Star Trek, the original series theme song that they never used. But he is credited as a co-writer of the song because he forced the studio to include the lyrics in the song. So he got a little bit of change every time it was played. So there you go. Gene Roddenberry. Fantastic for creating Star Trek, but also a jerk.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely stories to that effect. And I mean, it is kind of embarrassing that the fact is that they took exactly that character and they put him on a Voyager and they just changed his name. But I don't know. I like the actor. I like his, you know, early Americana obsessions. I like the fact that he goes from being like, you know, Lothario and tempter of Harry Kim, you know, to say like, hey, let's go out with the Delaney sisters and all that stuff, to settling down with a half Klingon, you know.
That's true.
Rather happily.
Yes.
You know, so there's like character growth in him that you don't see in some of the other characters. I like those Scottish, Irish.
Oh, you know, this is giving us a glimpse into your preferences.
Gingers.
Ginger. It's true. I think he's a handsome guy. That's not my problem with him. But I find him to be annoying.
Zillions of Star Trek fans can watch Star Trek for Seven of Nine. I can watch it for Robert Duncan McNeil.
Oh, so. No, I'm totally, hey man, the everybody wears a tight uniform. So enjoy. That's what I say. Not as tight as Seven of Nines, but she gets the tightest
we
one.
See that. Yeah, we see that in this episode. And once again, I'm like, I mean, the uniform is annoying enough, but the shoes, like the high heel shoes that she wears, I'm like, there's no way that would be regulation anything in any military, whatever.
So. Well, she's not really part of Starfleet, though, right? So she could, one assumes that she has chosen what she's wearing, I guess. I don't
know. Heels? I don't know. Did the Borg wear high heels? I don't think so.
I'm just saying. I don't know. I'm agreeing with you that I think it's ridiculous, but I am assuming that Janeway has not said, okay, Seven of Nine, Starfleet regulations dictate that if we save a Borg woman, she must wear this skin-tight uniform and these high heels. I don't write the rules. I just enforce them.
TV regulations dictate.
Yes.
If we're going to bring this hot woman onto the show and halfway, you know, well, they didn't know it was halfway, but whatever, through the series, then we're bringing her on for a specific reason, and it is not for her brain, even though she has an awesome brain.
She does. She's a fantastic character. I mean, I've had this discussion with you that I think that's, you know, obviously very attractive, but so much more than that. And a great character. Probably one of my top two Voyager characters. Not probably. Definitely.
Interesting. My top, I know your top one is Janeway, right?
Yes, I really like Janeway. Yeah. If I had to pick three, so the, every series, I think, has a trinity, right? So yes. The original series is Kirk, Spock, and McCoy, obviously, yeah. The original trinity. TNG is, of course, Picard, Riker, and Data. DS9, it gets tough, but I think that it would be Sisko, Dax, and Kieran Reese.
Yeah.
And then for Voyager, I would pick Janeway, Seven of Nine, and the Doctor.
Yeah. I mean, they're my favorite characters, too, although Torres is one of my favorite characters as well.
I do like Torres. She would be, if I had to expand it, which I could do, I would do. Torres is probably four. I would think that I do like Chakotay. Tuvok and Chakotay, I don't know where. I think I put Tuvok ahead of Chakotay.
Yeah, not he's because a Vulcan, not he's a weird, generic Native American guy.
Exactly, a weird, made-up, spiritual, lucid dreamer. He's a weird, made-up alien, but it's better. Yeah. And then the rest. Like, I don't like Harry Kim. I don't like Tom Paris. Neelix, Kes, was...
I like Kes better than Neelix or Harry Kim. I mean, Kes, whatever. I liked her sweetness, you know? I liked her little outfits, honestly. She looked like a little elf. And,
My main problem with Kes is not Kes, but it is her relationship with Neelix. So, you know, Neelix spoils everything.
Once again.
And then she left. Yeah. So Kes left. That was sad. But she got replaced eventually by Seven of Nine, who I think is a much stronger character. So
agreed.
And she is the main... Luckily, she's the main character, basically, of this episode, right?
Yeah.
Because we're spending a lot of time just talking about Voyager in general because the plot of this episode is really straightforward. So if we had just gone through this episode, we'd be done in like 10 minutes because it is not that crazy. Basically... there's this giant spaceship eating entity that has telepathic powers. It decides that Voyager looks tasty and it tricks Voyager and everybody on Voyager except for Seven of Nine and Naomi Wildman into thinking that it is a wormhole directly to Earth, which is so suspicious that I don't even understand how everyone could fall for it, except for the fact that they were being manipulated by this entity. But if they're being manipulated by this entity, why doesn't it just, you know, why does it go through all this effort? It could just say, you don't see me, you're just going to drive into me, and I will eat you. Seems like a lot of effort.
That's an excellent plot hole I hadn't thought of. Just like, why bother? There wouldn't be an episode.
Well, that's the main reason, right? You wouldn't have this whole episode if it just tricked you into driving into it because, what? I guess it likes to toy with you, but we find out later in the episode that it isn't sentient, probably. So, I don't know. It's just.
Did you find that out?
Well, the Doctor mentions that it is alive, and then the alien, whose name escapes me, Kawati, I don't know how to say it.
Yeah, with a Q.
Who is played by the same actor who plays in the J.J. Abrams Star Trek. He plays the Vulcan Academy guy who tells Spock that he has gotten into the Science Academy, and Spock's like, I don't want to go. Yeah, see?
Well, you know, he's in Next Generation, too.
He is. He's in. He's apparently played like four different parts in Star Trek.
Yeah. Yes.
He gets around. As do many.
He does. Yeah.
Star Trek characters.
He was also in Doctor Who. Really small part, but important. Oh,
what did he do in Doctor Who?
He was Canton, Delaware, the old version. Like, there's a very important episode of Doctor Who where they go back into time to the 60s and Doctor Who, the Doctor meets Richard Nixon.
Mm.
And there's an FBI agent who... the Doctor ends up, you know, befriending and enlisting. And that FBI agent in his like 2010 version of him is our alien from Bliss.
Oh, there you go. And the guy's name is William Morgan Shepherd. If people want to go check out his IMDb page, as I am doing right now. Apparently he was also in the Gilmore Girls. So
yeah, which I haven't watched. Don't tell anybody.
You haven't watched the Gilmore Girls. OMG. I love Star Trek. I also am a big fan of the Gilmore Girls.
So you should, yeah, well, it's a very well-written TV show, okay. Except for the last season. So you can skip the last season, except for the last episode.
Okay.
I'm
writing that down.
Gilmore Girls, very good. They're on Netflix. They're coming back. Check them out, people. Okay. I have thought about threatening to start a Gilmore Girls podcast, but I think that I have enough on my plate. So, and random Gilmore Girls doesn't roll off the tongue as well as Random Track does. So.
Yeah. You have, I mean, what are you on now? Episode 100 and something. And how many episodes are in your random episode generator?
Well, we've got, so some people ask this, so I will explain very briefly for folks how I get this number, because if you actually plot out how many episodes there are, it doesn't match. So 684 entries in my spreadsheet. I have excluded the animated series because I'm sorry, animated series people, but it doesn't count. And I have taken two-parters as one, because I feel you can't watch.
That's smart.
Like the randomly watch the second part of a two-part episode. It doesn't make any sense. Mm. And I've included the movies. So the movies are on there as well. And so there's a lot of Star Trek to get to cover. I can't throw in the Gilmore Girls. I'm sorry. No. Maybe it would be interesting if I just added the Gilmore Girls to my Star Trek spreadsheet. And then sometimes we just have a Gilmore Girls episode.
That would be funny.
I'm not sure people would appreciate that, though.
No, but it would bring up your relative ratio of male to female characters.
So that is true. Discussed. And it does. I think every episode of the Gilmore Girls most likely passes, what is it, the Bechdel test?
Bechdel test.
I think that's good. Not every episode of Star Trek does, although this episode certainly does.
Actually, 100% of Voyager, I think, passes, or I mean, Voyager is by far the highest.
Well, yes. And people listening who don't know what the Bechdel test is, it is when any show has, obviously, you need more than one female character. So two female characters talking to one another, having a discussion that is not about a male character.
Yeah.
So it is like, you know, it's not like someone's girlfriend talking about with her best friend about the boyfriend. It is their two women talking about something.
Yeah. With a female captain and a female engineer, and then 7 of 9, like you're, I think it is season 5 actually that 100%. I think there's some episodes that don't quite meet it, but anyway, I saw the figures. Somebody actually.
Oh, I did. I saw that chart. I will Google it, and it'll be in the show notes for people who care about such things. And if you don't care about such things, don't follow the link. Don't blame me. just watch the show. It's okay.
Well, this one passes the Bechdel test with, you know, flying colors.
Because that's right.
Neither one of them has a boyfriend.
That's right.
Naomi.
So Harry Kim has kind of wanted to be 7 of 9's boyfriend for a while, didn't he? He's kind of had his crush on her. Yeah. I don't think they ever get together, though, because that wouldn't work. 7 of 9, she needs, I don't know who she'd be interested in. She doesn't really need a boyfriend at all, frankly. Nobody does. I'm sure she'll find happiness. And I don't know if maybe there's an episode where she does.
See, we're getting into what Scott doesn't know about Voyager that I'm not going to tell him.
She has some sort of romantic pairing off.
Absolutely. Well, I would not let her go for that long. Well, forever, that's true. With that. Yeah.
It's a long time.
She has a few. You have a lot to look forward to if you like romance and Star Trek, and I do. Depending on who it is.
Well, that's true. There isn't that much romance in Star Trek, although in this episode, the twist, right, is that this alien thing is giving people what they want, right? So everybody on Voyager has been longing to go home. So, OMG, here is a wormhole that takes you directly to Earth. And hey, by the way, there are letters that are spewing out of it for everybody. And everybody gets great news. Neelix is an ambassador, which is when you would think, okay, this does not make any sense. Chakotay is going to become a professor somewhere. He's happy. Tom Paris is going to be a test pilot. Tuvok is
in Australia.
Yes, of course. Tuvok's going to see his wife and his kids. Although there's an interesting scene where 7 of 9 says, aren't you more excited than you thought you logically would be to see your wife and children? And Tuvok is like, yes, but stop bothering me.
That's an interesting, between the two of them, because they, you know, throughout the series, they respect each other very highly because they're both pretty logic based. And it's hard for her to see Tuvok along with everybody else. Like, she's not surprised by Paris or whoever, you know, succumbing to this, the telepathic powers of this beast, because those people aren't logical. But when Tuvok does, that's kind of the death knell of like, I'm on my own here.
Yes. And that's what, you know, she's, it is one of these episodes where I am the only sane person in an insane world. Also, Naomi Wildman is sane. And the random alien that we save from the wormhole, which isn't a wormhole, but a giant hungry alien. But the thing that I was getting to is that Janeway gets a message from her seldom discussed boyfriend,
fiance.
I don't know if they were fiance or not. Mark,
yes,
the famous elusive Mark, and he says he's broken up with his fiance and he can't wait for Janeway to get home. Everybody's getting what they want. And 7 of 9 spends maybe 2 minutes trying to talk to people and saying, "Don't you think this is too good to be true?" And everyone is like, "No, this is exactly as good as it should be."
Yeah, actually, like Paris says, like, "I can't believe it," you know, and she says, "So you are suspicious too?" And he's like, "No, I've already accepted the job."
No, this, like, is awesome. She does.
Even Seven, after 2 seasons, hasn't learned that "I can't believe it" doesn't mean "I can't believe it."
Yes, it is true. And then, oh, and the doctor is not impacted. And so the alien, which apparently, is it sentient or not? I don't know. Is clever enough to know that they need to shut the doctor down because he's not impacted. And 7 of 9 is not impacted because she has no attachment to home, even though she gets a letter from an aunt she's never heard of. And Naomi Wildman, who was born on Voyager and Voyager is her home, isn't impacted because what she wants is to stay on Voyager. So,
right.
And then so Voyager gets swallowed by this thing. They figure out, they meet the alien who was previously swallowed, who explains the whole thing. He gets called Captain Ahab. He tries to recruit the doctor. The doctor says no thanks. They give the alien indigestion and it vomits them up.
Yes.
And over. It's over. That's it. Everybody gets... everyone was knocked out when they got swallowed by the alien.
Yeah.
Also.
They all had to be woken up and...
And then they leave. They leave a buoy that says, yes, hey...
another buoy.
Somewhere around here, because it moves around, so I don't know, quite know what the buoy is going to do, is a giant alien that will control your mind and try and eat you. So, FYI, be on the lookout. I guess. And then they go to look for ways home. And it ends with the alien who has escaped going back in and getting swallowed again because he is obsessed with killing this thing because it has killed his family. The end. An uplifting end to a story. He continues his obsession and Voyager goes along its merry way.
Right.
So,
yeah, I mean, for me, the problem, you know, on an enjoyment scale of this episode of Voyager, I think it's a good episode, but all the characters besides Seven that I like are out of, you know, they're on the bench. Mm-hmm. You know, Janeway is not Janeway.
No.
Really. Although she does at the end, I mean, not at the end, but like, they're trying to subdue Seven so they can go through the wormhole without Seven, the so-called wormhole, without right. Seven messing up their plans. And Janeway's like, "I'm sending an EM pulse to that station." And I thought, well, she hasn't lost her science brain.
Right.
She lost her mind.
That was a very Janeway thing to do. Yeah. Like, I like Seven a lot, but man, my duty is to get this crew home, and this wormhole is getting us home, so I'm knocking you out, Seven. I'll apologize when we wake you up in orbit around Earth. But they don't get there, sadly. And of course, you know, this is a 5th season episode. You know at the very beginning that they're not getting home.
Yeah.
You know
it's not the finale of the 5th season.
Exactly. Like. So it has a lot to... You know that, right? So the basic premise you already know is kind of a trick to the crew, so it has to work really hard to make that trick pay off. And while I think it's a good episode, I don't think it is a great episode. It does remind me of that original series episode, which I think is a better episode, which is a problem for it, right? Because it reminds me of that, and I just think about a better episode of Star Trek. But that being said, I think it was a fine episode. Naomi Wildman and the interaction between her and Seven of Nine was fun. I did like, you know, it's always fun to watch Seven try and outwit the crew. So she throws up force fields all over the place, and that's fun. And, you know, trying to see them figure out how to get around that or not in this case.
It was definitely one of those, like, I consider him Scott McNulty, you know, not approved moments of, like, ship security problem. Like, where Seven's like, I want to listen to the captain's logs. Play the captain's log.
Yes.
No access. She opens up a panel. She pulls out some little piece of glass, presumably some, like, and then it's like, okay. I'm like, really? That's all she had to do to, like, get into what should be, like, very classified information?
I am glad you brought this up. I wrote this down in a note, but I forgot it all about it. But yes, this is totally unacceptable on many levels. She moves an isolinear chip and she cracks the encryption or something. And also, she's violating Janeway's privacy, one assumes, because she's reading her personal logs. Those are not what you're supposed to be reading. Although, you know, she's doing it for a greater good because she thinks everybody is taken over, and she's right. So she's right in the end, but the ends don't justify the means. Seven, I'm very disappointed. And also, Starfleet Security, very disappointed. It's
like, all you have to do is have, like, a alcove, you know, in one of the, you know, the storage bays.
Yeah, it's a random location, too.
Where you live and you, like, kind of know how to break into the ship on all these different levels and nobody monitors you.
Well, Gene, I think we both agree with this episode. It's good, but not great. But it was fun. So, thumbs up from me. And thumbs up to you for being on. Thank you so much for joining me again. It was great.
Same here. Thank you, Scott. I look forward to listening to 600 whatever more episodes of Random Trek.
Whenever anyone says that, I get exhausted, but thank you.